Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, where you get your daily dose of conspiracy therapy by cackling at all these terrible things that are going on around us. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Broadcasting live from this fabulously fluoridated and Fukushima irradiated island chained paradise of New Zealand, confined to a tiny spit of sand in the sun with no hope of escape. Like, I guess some kind of concentration camp victim in a third world country. My very special guests today, first of all, let me introduce Sandor Joseph Kovacs. He's the legal advisor to our very special guest that is now going to introduce for us.
Yes, Vinny, I'm glad to be here to be on your show with you and to all the listeners. I'd like to introduce our native North American and South American native Indian matriarch of the West. She is also the flag of the West holder. She is also a Queen Victoria 1837 silver medallion holder, and she is also a true royal bloodline native Indian princess, Kwayethanoth Tamoikin Kenmethka, or as we would refer to her as hereditary chief Ramona Lou Paul.
Quite a long title. Yeah. Well, let's see. Behind every great story, there's a great title. So let's tell her story then.
Hello. I'm not very good at this, but here goes. To be a voice for the many people, living souls, who are marginalized under systematic process. And those processes have been spread throughout North America, known as Turtle Island. Turtle Island became known as sick brackets, corporations, and undermined the allodial title and rights, and also undermined the Royal Proclamation and the many treaties and agreements, also known as the 60-40, appointed and signed by the Indian Commission, by the declaration signed by the monarchy of Britain. Also the many who were institutionalized through the systems of the government, the Catholic Church, such as like residential schools, of North America, coming from generation of genocide and shifting to the next generation of genocide. These declarations through many constitutions, the Constitution of 1867, has to be honored and not changed. With all the...
I'm unfamiliar with the Constitution of 1867. Could you possibly enlighten me?
It's nothing like the Constitution of 1982, which was changed or revised.
I don't know what that one is either. You'll have to forgive my ignorance.
Well, the 1982 Constitution here in Canada that was endorsed by Queen Elizabeth II herself with then the Prime Minister of Canada, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, was marking really officially the Charter of Rights and Freedoms of all the Canadians, which is a melting pot of all nationalities. It had nothing to do with the aboriginals of this Turtle Island in its local territories and regions. There is an independent declaration for all aboriginals. It's the Universal Declaration of Aboriginal Indians, but that's registered with the United Nations or the international communities. The whole structure that Ramona is concerned about as being a matriarch is that the native Indians of Turtle Island, and that goes for the United States as well, and into South America, is that they're under the international forum. They're not. They don't fall under the domestics of any of these undermined Declaration of Human Rights or of the Freedom Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And her reference, what she's basically saying is the BNA, or the British North American Act, was in particular specifically designed and written for the North and South American Indian. Now that goes on to the Mayans, the Aztecs, and so forth, into South America, because we all know that the British monarchy had a habit of exploring the globe for all their own purposes. And since then, there has been on two occasions where the British North American Act has been revised, and Ramona's referring to one. The second that she was referring to that you had said that you weren't familiar with, which is just the one that was pertaining to all other nationalities of Canadian citizens, whether you're born.
So they originally passed a raft of legislation to protect the rights of Aboriginals, and then they passed another raft of legislation to say, oh, we're protecting everybody's rights by taking them all away.
Correct. Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better.
Yep, sounds about right.
It sounds about right.
Yeah.
And the whole purpose of that is that basically the one that involves the southern of our partners here in the United States, the Indian Act in itself is probably the most ridiculously prejudicial, discriminatory doctrine that has ever been written by any man or woman.
You're kind of going off camera there a little bit. You might want to kind of smush together a little bit more.
The Indian Act, for example, I'll just give an example that all the listeners can relate to with some emotion, and that is Ramona is a very large property owner through inheritance of her hereditary chief grandfather, Francois Temoykin. Basically, the whole land area of what's known as Penticton, British Columbia, in the Pacific West Coast of what everyone thinks is Canada, used to belong to her grandfather, and the whole idea was that the territories were divided in such areas where there were certain designated hereditary chiefs that was recognized by the British monarchy as actual true royal bloodline. There was vast amounts of lands that was agreed, and not so much that it was an agreement with the British monarchy, but it was just established that these are my four posts, as a native man or an hereditary chief would refer to. These are my four posts, meaning in a personal sense with all his people that are under his hereditary chief leadership. Then there's the regional, territorial, and so forth. Then there's a migration expansion that all other tribes recognize as whose local areas for hunting, berry gathering, and so forth, for medicines and roots and that. So as it turns out, Ramona has a large, vast amount of land, which would be considered that as large today as well. And as it turns out, a lot of the documentations have been revised or altered to the point where they have made her matriarchism disappear.
That's interesting, because there's some Maori elders in New Zealand who also of royal bloodline, also recognized by the Queen. He went away to fight for New Zealand and Vietnam, and when he came back, they'd taken all his lands, altered all the documents, and removed any of his claims of chiefship.
absolutely. And that same tactic has been happening in Canada. At very early on stages, Vinny, you and I probably weren't even born when that sort of tactics were being used and implemented. It goes back quite a ways.
Yeah, I think even children being born today can see these kind of tactics being implemented.
Absolutely. And it was actually coming up here. Today is the 19th of December. In 3 days, it was exactly 1 year, 3 days from now, from today, it will be exactly 1 year that I introduced Ramona's Queen Victoria 1837 medallion here, just down the street here in Vancouver, British Columbia, in front of the Vancouver Art Gallery on George's Street. It's one of the main fairways here in the city. And it was on a Sunday, and there was a small gathering of many people, not just Native Indians, but many people are in support of fixing the Indian Act. And I'm going back now to explaining the Indian Act, that all the listeners out there could understand and relate to this. With Ramona being a large landowner, this is something that's in the Indian Act, and most of the doctrine and documentations in its sections in the Indian Act as a complete whole text is so discriminatory that if Ramona was to accept my proposal in marriage, she will lose all her land because of my background, that I'm not a Native Indian savage. That is still key. That is still key. All the true original writings refer to her people on Turtle Island, and that includes the United States, as savage Indians. That is an exact quotation that all to describe the specific people that the British monarchy are speaking of in that doctrine, in that documentation that are stored in the archives. Now, Ramona and I have been wanting to marry, for example. We've been wanting to marry for just over 6 years now. Now, any individual would realize that the way society has curbed things, as you had mentioned as well, with having hiding things, changing things, altering things, and all that, that as it turns out, we are not that foolish that we're going to sacrifice the way things are being run, whether illegally or not. We're not going to allow to have it run and take a chance on harming ourselves by both of us accepting our vows in marriage, and then later on found out that we made the biggest mistake, and that is volunteering to forfeit the land.
But haven't they already taken the land off of you anyway? So they've taken your land, and the problem is you don't even have each other either in marriage.
Absolutely.
Because they'll confiscate land that you don't have.
And if that couldn't be any more discriminatory, I don't know what is. Now, here's it. There's always got to be the end of a short story or a long story or an ongoing story. What we've done is both of us have gone to the International Criminal Court this past April of this year. We had three meetings. And the beautiful thing about that was it was expressed immediately that this was classified as unofficial, and I quickly jumped on that, and I sponsored it. I agreed with it, and I said that's the best kind of meetings, because that's when everyone's speaking around the table that's actually saying something of substance and guidance and helping each other on what they can do, what they cannot do, who should do what, when they should do it, what is the minimum, what is the maximum of everyone participating in the table to make a notice of motion in a legal sense to bring in the cases along with the evidences. And that was our main purpose, is to report officially on site to the International Criminal Court what is going on in Canada, even though the documentation is all over the news, newspapers, television, documentaries, and so forth. That's just a bonus. But as it turned out, they congratulated us because they said to us that many, many people over the years have since, it was what, 2009, that actually the United the International Criminal Court became officially open for business. That would handle these systematic processes of crimes, where government has individuals doing certain procedures and steps in order to, well, in other words, Vinny, you and I would say jumping the hoops. That once you've done the hoops and the hoop jumping, then all of a sudden you may be able to go on forward to, as a citizen, to get your permit or your marriage certificate or whatever it is, that, or your license to drive a vehicle, all these nonsenses. Now, we in Ramona is a matriarchism that is only interested in sovereignty. We all have sovereignty. We all have it. It belongs to us. It was given to us at our birth date, the day we became breathing on this planet.
And incidentally, it was taken away on the exact same day with a birth certificate with a corporate name on it.
Absolutely. And that's the moment, and I'm glad that you brought that up, that's the moment that the ones who had stolen, basically, your parents' name, that they named you by that birth certificate document, borrowed immediately money on your name, and registered it, and now you, that moment you became a ghost within your own family, community, within your own living soul, and for the rest of your life. Sovereignty, it was removed from you immediately.
Yeah. Well, now, that's because it's dangerous. It's kind of the same reason why you impose gun bans on native tribes as well. Because, hey, if these people can fight back and defend themselves and have some kind of sovereignty, we won't be able to kill and enslave them easily.
That's true, absolutely. And authorities all over the world, whatever nationality or linguistics one speaks out there on our beautiful planet, we're all brothers and sisters, and we all, I think, agree with the elected system. We have, all of us people have given it long enough of a try to see the results on, in a process, in a progress, in studies, in study cases, whether or not the elected system works. We all know globally, we could probably agree with the odd ball here and there in the mixture, that the elected system does not work. And it actually creates environment damage. It creates raping of the lands, raping of actual individuals themselves, of their freedom of choice of education, their choice of where they would like to live, where they like to work, and so forth.
And people just keep going. They keep believing in it. It's like, it's almost as if the public has become a problem gambler. They're sitting at the table. They keep losing their money. So they play another hand, hoping that they'll win it back. And they lose that too. And they're like, okay, I'll have to give up my house next. So they give that too. And they lose their hand again. And then they start to lose their wristwatch. Then they start to lose their family. Then they start to lose everything. And then finally they lose themselves. That's what believing in the current system does for you. The house always wins. Why do you think they call it the House of Parliament?
Absolutely. I would say it about the same way as you just had. I mean, there's a process of how you think you may be able to hang on to whatever is valuable to you, whether it's the sovereignty, your family, your job, your possessions, or your land, because all has a sense of value to the individual, the entity, because you see things as valuable in its purposes. So you're correct, because the whole system and establishment is set up to strip away everything that you may perhaps would like to do or would like to accomplish, whether it's just as yourself as a family unit or an individual or a contributor to your local area, regions, or nation, or globe, your global brother and sister. So Ramona and I, as her legal chamberlain, would like to propose to many people out there of all nationalities and languages that on Sunday, December 22nd, 2012, exactly 3 days from now will be a year, I convinced her to bring out her medallion, and it has been put in the safety deposit box, and it was minted in 1837, so that marks it as being 173 years old. And I knew at the time, 5 years prior, talking with Ramona quite a bit, that I convinced her that not only her medallion is the last one, but all the rest of them have been either stolen by the local authorities of the RCMP police in Canada with the cooperation of a list of only the British monarchy would have this list of all the appointed hereditary chiefs and their families and their locations of who was given and presented a complete set of this British, what's known as the British Columbian flag. But that's just so that everyone can understand which flag we're referring to. But it is basically, it's Ramona's flag and hers alone, hers single-handedly. And if I may just quickly show the actual flag, that this is how it's flowing in BC, British Columbia.
Oh, yeah. It's like... It's like halfway the British flag and halfway the sun at the bottom burning up like white and blue stripes with a wee crown in the middle there.
Now the whole idea with this flag is this is the actual agreement between the British monarchy and the native peoples.
I want to read in the story about what it is.
And Ramona, Her Royal Highness Ramona would like to read, there's been songs of the words of this flag agreement, and it's also been put in words in a way that one could read the literature. So she would like to add to by just reading what the flag and all its symbolism.
Well, Ramona,
mean.
If you want to then sit in the center there, and perhaps Joseph, you could sit behind her.
Yes. Just show the medallion. Just hold it up, and that's a two-sided. 1837.
See, I don't know if you can get it.
You got to hold it up just a little bit further. You see, you got to hold it up here in the center.
There you go. You're there.
I can't even make out any of the details. The webcam's too low quality, unfortunately. You got to get the light refracted off it properly. Oh well, this is a problem. What we'll do is we'll take a screenshot of that afterwards, and I'll insert it into the video. So anyway, you have a story to tell, a song to sing.
Yes, I'm going to read to you about the flag and about the medallion and what it means. And here goes. To all the sovereigns across and on Turtle Island, I'm talking straight as my Holy Spirit through my living soul can, so that you can understand. This story, and in my language, is called Cheptik, which is history that will open your eyes to the truths that have been kept in my heart. And now I'm going to tell it like it's supposed to be told. The time has come to reveal it so I can have some strength. To be led to be a better way to know what to do to all that suffered loss of their people and most of all their loved ones. That had taught you to accept and live day by day in grace, and you did. This is dedicated to all those who are gone ahead and let their legacy be as the Creator, Kulin Chutin, and your language, my language, and in yours, Jesus Christ, wanted it. My story was to be told by my mother and my father, who was told by their grandfather and their greats, who is now with the Lord, and in my language, Kulin Chutin. Skios Dumikum, Indian chief, and the flag, Skikios, of the West, Guskiloch, deal with the four corners for the king. This was told to me in Chaisquis Kwahiasonos Tomoikin Kenmethka. Agent for Ramona Lou Paul, by my father, Ken Methka, agent for Basil Paul, Guskilch du Skilch du Michum, and the Lord Jesus Christ talked. The king says to Chief Sinclair, how do you come here? And the Chief Coyote, which is Sinclair, says, my kids and your kids are going to be crowded. King says, nobody tells me what to do. Nobody. Chief Coyote Sinclair says, look at my army. And the king did. And as far as the eye could see, my father stretched out his arm for me to look and imagine. And then my father tells me that the king's army was about the same. And the king and Chief Coyote made an agreement that for as long as the sun shines, rivers flow, and the two will work side by side, there will be no assimilation, and there will be four corners on this Turtle Island, and on each territory enhammered with the royal seal, and are not to be removed. Anyways, if the king says, nobody tells me what to do, our Chief Coyote Sinclair stayed calm and talked nothing but the truth and said to the king, if you do not like my word, nobody knows I'm here. Either you kill me or I will kill you. Slowly and calmly right here and right now. The king must have been very surprised because he did not know how Chief Coyote got there. Sinclair says, I'm not telling you what to do because you are king, but your kids, your children, will pretty soon crowd out my kids. The camping ground has to be posted, and I can go anywhere to hunt and gather my food. And I did not come here for trouble. You're king, and I am chief. We have to work together. Your kids have to know these things, and nothing can be changed forever. And the king agreed. And with that, he put his king's crown on all that they have fixed. This is why the British Columbia flag, the flag of the West, means for this, for all sovereigns, Indians across and on North America, which is called Turtle Island, means the four directions on North America, Turtle Island, are represented by the lateral and vertical bars on the British Columbia flag, the flag of the West. For as long as the sunshine goes around, this gives an indication of this age of this international treaty, which reflects the previously held belief that the sun orbits the earth rather than the reverse, and it is followed by the moon, and the cycle is repeated and is physically shown as the half sun in the British Columbia flag. For as long as the rivers flow, as represented by the blue wavy lines on the British Columbia flag, the flag of the West, the Aboriginal peoples will be undisturbed. The two peoples, Aboriginal and newcomer, agree to exist and mutual respect, but will not interfere with each other. This is similar to the terms which the Wampum Belt of the Iroquois Confederacy. They will be live side by side. There will be no assimilation. The crown placed over the entire top of the scene on the flag is to depict the responsibility of the crown to protect and preserve the agreement made, the honor of the crown, to protect and preserve the agreement that was made through her. A thoughtful mind, when it sees a nation's flag, sees not the nation, sees not the flag. In my language, it's skiyus, but only the nation itself and whatever may be its symbols, its insignia. He reads chiefly in the flag, the government, the principles, the truths, the history which belong to the nation that sets it forth. The nation's flag in 1861, that is why entering into land claims through the BC Treaty process, domestic, municipal treaties are not to be confused with the international law. This is why entering into land claims concerns the elders, and it would amount to breaking this international treaty, dishonoring this history of British Columbia, and acting contrary to the intentions and word of our ancestors, thereby bringing dishonor to the Indigenous peoples. It has been practice of Great Britain to provide peace medals to honor a treaty with the Indigenous peoples. Peace medals dated 1837 from Her Majesty Queen Victoria were provided to the chiefs and the hereditary chiefs and continue to exist today. They are tangible evidence, collaborating the testimony of the elders, that a treaty was in fact entered into between the Indigenous people and Britain. I have seen one of these medals, because I own one of them. A lot of them have been stolen from their holders. In fulfillment of my obligation to these elders, I have described this treaty as they requested that I do, and refrain from disclosing all of the knowledge that has been imparted to me about this. The Aboriginal peoples are proud of this achievement and have always desired to preserve the treaty so that the Aboriginal Indian, or savage as we have been named, well, the sovereigns will not endanger their very existence. Elders caution, however, the younger Aboriginal peoples, Indigenous, that there is much more to be understood than simply the above, which can only be passed on by the elders to those ready and able to listen. This is a history that was told to prove to me that the time has come to tell it again. Thank you.
And now we have it recorded, so as many people as possible can actually hear it. One point that struck out me there was I was confused about one thing. It was about Turtle Island. And then I remembered a Native American belief that the world is actually a giant turtle, kind of like woven its way through space, and they all lived on the North American continent, so they thought that was the world, hence Turtle Island, right?
Yes. Oh, I guess I had another... I didn't realize I had another page.
So, continue.
I'm sorry. So you know that only God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit is the only one that gives you everything. That is why my great-grandfather knew about allodial title and rights. You see, now the ones now are calling it just title and rights and have God nothing to do with anything, but he gave us everything. Allodial title and rights of the lands here on Turtle Island. You see, I will never forget that. How can I? And they always gave thanks through prayers, sweat lodge, hunting, planting, fishing, harvesting, basketry, horses, forestry, haying, everything. So here is the truth and facts of my journey, is I'm first to give thanks and to give all praise, honor, and glory to my Father in heaven and my Lord Jesus and to the Holy Spirit and to all my sovereigns out there, Kulin Chutin. Thank you. I've been known to wait on the system for a while, and that's a problem. And the system is failing not only me, but all reserves across Turtle Island. But that's another story. And that's, I'm going to stop right there, because it starts getting, my wording is, it's very harsh, and I don't want to.
I'm a fan of harsh wording, to be honest.
Okay.
Humor me.
Okay. I'm not going to get in trouble, am I?
What am I going to do? Beat you with a stick?
Okay. The problem with the system is failing not only me, but all reserves across Turtle Island. But that's another story. What needs to be done with your knowledge, it's having faith and belief that you can make a difference. The more I spoke and presented myself at court, the more they worked in color of law. You see, that is why things have gone from bad to worse. Because of the truths, and because of my family of hereditary chiefs and the true bloodline, that the attacks are present and a lot of them are corrupted from the federal and provincial governments and institutions, inclusions with self-government institutions and their public servants, federal agents through banned offices. They have used defamation of character, oppression, theft, stealing, fraud, discrimination, false arrests, kidnapping, break and enter, causing danger to life, genocide, cut my kids off of busing to school, school district 67. Should I go on? Cut my kids off of funding in the middle of their school. No computer. I was not allowed a computer. I still don't know how to run one of these. My poppies knows how to run these things, so I get him to do this. And this is very... Okay, I'll go on. But this has happened to me directly, to my family. No money, no funding to get a trade, no funding to graduate. They went as far as conspiring with the RCMP, Blake Walkinshaw, to steal my father's van, my father's Econo van, even on the reservation land, and cause my father to walk before getting sick and died. Complications from diabetes that was all documented. The asbestos pipes that were in my home, in my mother's home, and she died of ovarian cancer on the reserve. The band office now just got $4 million to change all of the pipes and to remove the evidence. These are the things why it was important for us to go to the ICC, International Criminal Court. We were living on apricot seeds in the season of August. We came to Vancouver and slept in the most horrendous places, like the Fountain, where people were street, where people were shooting up, doing drugs. And this was all to save money to get a plane ticket. Because nobody would help us. Nobody would contribute. We did it on our own. No one had a conscience. My father was an elder. but we pushed forward, and this is where we are now. We are homeless again, and we returned. They cut us off of our disability again since April, and we haven't gotten anything for 9 months. We have a court file number from the International Criminal Court. What is that number?
The International Criminal Court has an office of the head prosecutor, and it is the OTP, Information and Evidence Unit, and its head bureau manager, his name is Mark, middle initial P, Dillon. And he heads that office, which is basically gathering all the evidence and information that would be presented to the head prosecutor's office to be examined as evidences of certain individuals or groups throughout the world of their issues that they feel as though falls into the Rome Statute. Now, as of July 2nd, 2006, was the birth date of now accepting more than just crimes against humanity, besides crimes of war, war crimes, or genocide crimes, or of genocide. Now they are accepting, they will not go back any further than the date of July 2nd of 2000. It stipulates that in the Rome Statute, but they will accept the modern-day version of crimes, which is a global epidemic with such a spreading of disease using systematic process, where the government is very well known about that, where they have you jump hoops, as we said earlier, and greed to earlier, and They're actually, in fact, most of the procedures of that is criminal and illegal. Through using their public servants and their government institutions, regardless of what level, whether it's at the national level or the provincial level or state, it's a serious crimes. It used to be in an area where all the United Nations offices and departments, as well as the International Criminal Court and the International Common Law Court of Justice. Now, as I'm referring it to, is that the secondary is the one where this type of crimes belongs to that level of court. And they established that. It took about 12 years for the establishment of the International Criminal Court to establish the secondary court where these blatant, obvious crimes are happening. They're crimes that they have actual results of very harmful and damaging, and including dying, or of obvious mental, bringing on mental illnesses, or lack of medical attention to where it warrants to bring on other diseases to the individual that was already suffering with one but not being treated for it. So they classify it and bracket it as systematic process. And the International Criminal Court itself was, in their words, were that they were very interested in these modern type crimes, even though they've been going on for many, many decades. But they're registering it as fairly new.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't think this thing going on is very new at all. And to my recollection, concentration camps also had a systematic process.
Absolutely. They were called bunkers, and certain one of them did certain procedures.
Now, what I notice here is a common thread. We had a UN rapporteur for indigenous inequalities. He's doing a big kind of report for the UN about it. He came to New Zealand. And I asked him, is there a common thread between all Indigenous cultures and them having their rights taken away from them. And he says, yeah, colonization, right? As soon as you get colonized, like, let's say a human being wants to colonize a hill or something like that, and there's all these rabbits there. What do you do to the rabbits? You annihilate them, yeah. because they threaten any foundations you put down. And when the royals, the British Empire, I think the legal system was started up by Sir Francis Bacon, put down all of these routes around the world, they had this envisaged system whereby everybody would be held back by progressive legislation, and if they wouldn't be held back by legal means, they had other means just to hold them back just as much, if not worse. There is the system of suppression of Indigenous cultures. I'm not 100% sure why they feel it's absolutely necessary to not cooperate, to not honour their treaties, or anything like that. It's just what they do. And they care not the human suffering, the carnage, and the sacrifice that gets made in order to enforce such a will on a race of people. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can see. Okay, here's an example. I'm going to tell you what Vinny's talking about. On August 24th, or was it August 24th?
August long weekend.
August long weekend. What year was that?
2008.
I was arrested for going up to the band office for getting my $235 check, and I had two teenage kids living with me, and they told me that I couldn't receive it until after the weekend, Tuesday, where my kids didn't have anything to eat. So when I said, why are you doing this, and whatever, they told me that they had called the RCMP and the First Nations Juanese Antonio to arrest me. And my witness is here because he had tape recorded it and audioed it, and then they took me away. these are just examples of what we have to go through.
You didn't get tortured at all, did you?
Yeah. I had to go to the hospital because I had handcuffs so deep into my skin that I had to go to the emergency and dented the bone and the muscle.
Whoa.
And it still shows. So, these are the things that...
There was no argument, no yelling, no profanity.
There was no yelling or no profanity, but this is what they did to me. And another time, they kidnapped me right in my own house. I had my robe, my bathrobe on, and they pushed him out of the way and came and got me and kidnapped me right off the reserve. And it was on private property, and no clothes on. And they had no warrant to come on to private property. So, yeah, I can say a lot of things have happened that were very negative, very...
traumatic.
Not only that, but they were working in color of law. So, kind of like... and also color of judge. They did not give me justice. And this is why I do what I do now.
Not even in an admiralty sense.
And not even in admiralty sense either.
Mm. Well, I've seen this as a common phenomenon around the world, and I've heard countless people tell very similar stories to you for all number of different reasons. Some people are like you in the same position of royal bloodlines. Other people expose corruption and have this happen to them. Other people leak documents which make the government look bad that have this happen to them. This whole system is not confined to a race of people, nor is it confined to any nation, nor is it confined to any language. It's an all-encompassing global system, I found. The problem is here, and I think this is what people don't get, is that they try to make you feel alone, cut you off from all your support networks and things of that nature. You'll see relatives die or you know, horrible things. And the whole idea is, if you're isolated and you feel powerless, then you stop fighting against them. And that's what they want. They want you to give up. So the fact that you haven't give up means that you're still winning, no matter how bad no matter what bad things they do to you. And I congratulate you.
Thank you. We're still here, still fighting.
Yeah. It reminds me of a speech in The Matrix that Morpheus gave. He says, what was it? I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years they have sent their machines and their armies to destroy us. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here.
Absolutely. Here.
All right. Well, I think that's a good way to round off the first hour there. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be taking a short break, and we'll be right back with you after this. Welcome back, everybody. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio and also affiliate networks around New Zealand and the world. Now, my very special guest, Her Royal Highness Ramona, sounds kind of like some sort of superhero, you know, like Wonder Woman, incidentally draped in a cape of a flag-like nature. And her confidant, representative and legal affiliate, Sandor Joseph Kovacs. Now, where were we? We were talking about how, despite a century of war, we're still here kind of thing. Where do you envisage this going? Have you been having successes that are emboldening to you to continue this fight?
Yes. We went all the way to the ICC, and like I wrote down what we did and what people we saw and spoke to and what was said back to us and to where we are right now. That's why I put it down as it's happening. What we went through and what it took and how long. So if I don't mean to bore you, but so that I could continue.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, the level of ignorance of the general public, I'd like to see that change. Because right now, I'm sure a lot of Canadians think the ICC is some sort of, I don't know, ocean off the coast of Canada during winter.
Yeah, a hockey team or something.
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to continue to read?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. We went and got the files. The matriarch, the flag of the West Holder, Miss Kwahiyasunos Tamoikin Tenmethka, sovereign hereditary chief of the Skilk people, state. I'm also known as agent for Ramona Paul on this at this time I wrote this, it was on the 11th day, the 11th month in the year 2011. To have all that I am presenting now as part to be entered and included with this affidavit, to be inclusion within, to be entered into the Canada Evidence Act, by having the separate sovereign people of Quebec to proceed towards notice of motion within the jurisprudence of the fullest, whereas once all my records / files were gathered in personal appearance, and intending the juris jura to deliver the state the documents and instruments of materials on the latter date designated, the remaining evidences in the whole, it brought me here to Vancouver with the knowledge that my family being excluded in meetings, talks, is why things are the way they are. You see, I had to come or die. The direct involvement with the offices of the Public Works Government of Canada, Services of Canada, located in Manitou, Quebec, and I have all the address and all that, to advance all my documents, instruments, and materials to the offices of the United Nations Human Rights Commission, Commissioner Louise Arbour, and Special Procedures Division, OHCHR, UNOG, to include the International Criminal Court, President Mr. Philip Kirsch of the Information and Evidence Unit, where both offices are located at The Hague, Netherlands. That's what we have done so far, but I also want to let the people know that I'm not just bad-mouthing parts of, like, First Nations, but I want to let you know how it is and what the truths are. The Okanagan writs say that the plaintiffs are the chiefs of the Indian bands, ipso facto. The chiefs thereof are Indian Act chiefs, members of their respective bands, and of the Okanagan Nation. The plaintiffs together represent the Okanagan Nation and brings this action on their own behalf and on behalf of all members of their bands and their nation. But Indian Act chiefs have the authorities as provided by the federal legislation and are agents of the federal government, all as defined by the domestic courts interpreting the Indian Act. That's all they are. This is but another bare assertion of the style of imitating the master. The Okanagan writ says that the plaintiff chiefs together represent the Okanagan Nation, but I know of no Okanagan protocols having been followed, of no authorities having been permitted these plaintiffs to speak for the Okanagans or to make such misrepresentations. In other words, in other areas where such writs have been similarly filed, I have seen no evidence that would lead to such misrepresentations being binding against the purported subject peoples. While the putting on the writ set up a strong, de facto, defeated ethnic minority scenario, this does not serve to defeat the de jure reality of sovereign Indigenous peoples, and there is much action underway consistent with the de jure. First Nations, as corporations, can only have contractual rights that nonetheless can fall or fail under Section 35 of the Constitution Act in 1982, but they do not have Aboriginal allodial title and rights, the fundamental human rights, surreptitious Bill C-27, fraudulent purpose, monitoring health care services, First Nations dispositions of closed complaints. Sukunakan name, my name, in Cha Isquis Kwahiathanos Tomoikin Tindathka. Court file room, court staff, and court of St. James called Mohican Indians versus Connecticut. The order and council of Queen Anne of 1704. To this day, this attachment and other attachments, known as the Royal Proclamation of 1763 and the Jay Treaties of 1794, are binding on all de facto courts, when properly with our Sukunakin mantra, we assert our judicial review to get the results that we want. The Magna Carta was also accepted for value by us some time ago, and it also too affirms the claim of right of mankind and the queen, the king and queen claim without claim of right. As long as we claim the claim of right, who we are, and I have many times in court representing myself, and I also have gotten arrested many times to try to represent myself under my Indian name, and my witness is here when they jumped on me on my back when I tried to say my Indian name. Four of them. And that's it.
Now, can we have a look back in time for a moment? Why are they jumping on you so viciously? It's because of what you're exposing. I mean, let's think about the implications. What do you think are the broader implications for, say, Indigenous movements, just in Canada, let alone the world, of this? That the one half of the treaty is not being fulfilled? Like the royals, the crown, are in the wrong?
Yes.
And
yes,
they owe reparation, significant quantities of it, both in land, sovereignty, and in wealth. Is that about right?
That's about right.
And in this kind of scenario, you know the old saying, oh, well, if you let one in, you have to let them all in, that kind of thing. Maybe that's part of the reason why they're suppressing people like yourself and so many others who are fighting along similar paths, for fear that if one were to get success, it would set a precedent and all of the other fights for Indigenous rights would come through swinging. Which is why it is so important for the establishment to treat you in this way, to make you give up, as I said earlier. And what was it you were saying before about the Okanagan people? Is that how you pronounce it, Okanagan?
Yes.
Okay. Because it occurs to me, interestingly enough, that if you're trying to mess with the Okanagan people, you can't be right in your noggin. You know what I'm saying? There must be something wrong in your noggin.
Very good. Very good.
Very imaginative. That's true. That's very true.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
not well in the noggin.
There's something wrong in the noggin, yeah. You know, it's the eggnog nation.
It's where Christmas. That's right. That's right.
It's where Christmas lives.
I ask you not to make me laugh.
Oh, you don't know how the show works then, you know. Because in general, that's what it is, you know. Like you've got the little screen behind me. When you guys are cracking up at your most, when you're just not handling it well, that is the screenshot that I will take, that I will use as the screenshot for the audio archives, you know. So you go down the audio archives of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and you see person after person after person talking about the occult, about scumbaggery, about murder, deceit and deception and horrific, terrible things, all laughing their asses off. And I think this is quite cathartic in a way. Don't you think? Because, you know, it's even biochemically, you know, it releases a nice bit of endorphins. It's like, oh, yeah, they're trying to kill me, but, man, that's funny.
That's right. And they actually have tried to kill us many times.
See that? And here you are still cackling about it. It's a survival mechanism.
There was another video of me at the band meeting at the October 17th, where they were electing the band council or a band chief of last year, and they were like, get that mic away from her, shut her up, get her out of here. My sister Eileen happened to be at that meeting, and they were, did not want me to speak. They more or less
gave a speech.
Told me to leave, more or less.
Your sister Eileen, what do you call a woman with one leg?
Oh.
Eileen. Or pig.
Or pig.
Okay.
So as it turned out, on that Wednesday, October 17th, there's a young man that works. He's very good in technical for audio and video and recording and that. And one of his jobs is to record these public general meetings. And Ramona usually does not attend them because they're all the First Nation guidance and talking of those issues. There are some times where she must appear to be representing the sovereignty, and that is to have her vote or her voice said as no, we or I do not agree. So it sounds familiar because many nations in the world actually do the same thing.
It seems like a version of nationhood corporate takeover to a degree. So
yeah.
It happened here in New Zealand too. I talked to one of the elders and I asked, you know how there's an elite, you know, in the world, you know, they can control and run a lot of things, set of policies, fund the World Bank, etc. Is there a brown elite within Māoridom that control the resources within Māori and dictate all of this kind of stuff? And he goes, yeah. Well, what happened is they, I think it was not too long ago, though the original tribes were married into by outsiders who then proceeded to take over control of all the resources and cast aside all of the responsibilities and take everything that was there for themselves and wound up in control of everything. Is a similar story in Canada?
Yes. Very similar. And not just a few of them. There's, like you said earlier in the program, when we first started, this is such global and it's such a frequent occurrences, the same patterned, repetitive crimes that are being done in certain circles.
Yes, it's sort of like the ones that are elected through, like...
manipulation.
They're the ones that are corrupted. They're the ones that are getting the funding, and the ones like myself that tell the truth. Well, you don't get nothing.
Basically, they're trying to force you to play ball by taking away things from you if you don't. You know, I mean, what are they? Your parents?
Well, no.
Do they get you to take out the trash after the meetings and everything? You know.
No.
You don't lend a hand in the kitchen? Nothing?
No, nothing.
Nothing. There is not even a kitchen to make purpose of what a kitchen is made for. There's no food in the house.
Really? That's freaking stupid. Because I've never been to any kind of tribal gathering of any kind where food isn't one of the main parts of the event.
Well, we would all agree as all of us sitting here as a triangle between ourselves and the studio here that when you see the elected on any reservation being able to not only maintain but operate a vehicle known as a Hummer, there is very high officials in federal and provincial governments that cannot afford such vehicles under the salaries that are. Generous taxpayers paid for their positions of work as their salaries. Now, that does draw some attention when someone who is an administrator for the land department of the matriarch of the West's reservation in particular, her name is Joan Phillip. She was also the wife of an ex most recent Penticton Indian Band chief, Stuart Phillip. He is now the BC Grand Chief of all the chief council in British Columbia. where she's driving a Hummer. And she's not driving the ladies' version either.
There's a lady version of a Hummer? Was it a lipstick red?
There's a smaller version, then there's the midsize, and then there's an Arnold Schwarzenegger version. You know, the cigar-smoking version.
Your tax loophole's so big I could drive my Hummer through it.
That's right.
Now, and see, to make that kind of wealth, whenever you're in some kind of, like, normal position, if you're making more money above your pay grade, two things occur to me. Number one, is this person selling drugs? Number two, is this person committing fraud? Drugs and fraud are the only way to make that much money. Incidentally, are the two main income streams for a company called the CIA.
Yes, yes. And here's another example with Ramona. We had a lady that was, we found out after the fact, the same weekend that she was arrested on August long weekend in 2008, a lady was hired under contract terms and conditions to look after or take over the human resources file, which is basically paying each an individual of age their monthly check from the Treasury, Secretary Treasury of Canada, and the band's office is to administer the finances to accordingly. As it turns out, the lady's name, her nickname was Fix-It, and her real name is Della Shade. Now, she does have her education in a university degree.
Della Shade. Della Shade? Sounds like some kind of X-Men villain.
That was her name. Even her license plate on her vehicle had the abbreviations of that. Now, she is an individual that was selected by many other North American INAC, which is the Canadian Office for all the Aboriginal Affairs. Now, they just finished, Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister, just finished changing that portfolio and abolished the INAC institution, Indian Northern Affairs of Canada, and now has renamed it. And so, in other words, to be able to now put all of the documentations of all these years into the basement archives and close the door and now begin whole new portfolios. In other words, another similar cover-up. He just did that with the CSIS, Canadian Secret Intelligence Service Office, that does the reviews of all the agents and all their investigations globally. He's closed that office. It doesn't exist.
I guess that's an example of how the corruption never ceases.
Exactly. Exactly, Vinny. Exactly. And what they've done is they've gone as far as when Della began her work, she lasted 9 months. And at the end of the 9 months, she began her process appropriately as a outstanding, willing and wanting to perform at the best of her ability and knowledge, because she was asked to come there by the band manager, Greg Gabriel. For 27, 28 years, he's held his position. Whereas chiefs are elected, they come and go. Now, this man is the center of all the corruption. He is the hub. It was just recently, a matter of a few days ago, that Mrs. Joan Phillip, the wife of ex-Stuart Phillip, chief of BC Grand Chiefs Council, confirmed Ramona not even 3 days ago that the individual that's done most of the harm on their band and all their members is responsible by the Penticton Indian band manager, Mr. Greg Gabriel. Now, we would all agree that anybody that's holding the same office, that all the other departments have to come to him for signatures or to okay things, that he is the all-seeing eye, in other words, for that particular institution.
He's like the Sauron of Quebec.
Yes, I am the god of this mountain, of all these 937 people. They belong to me. I need new tires for my jacked up Ford pickup. I need that $3,000 tire. I need that. And he deals with, and he's handed at least approximately $12 to $18 million a year annually.
Whoa.
There are made believe Okanagan colleges that have the sign and a street where you would drive down, but there's no building. Now they're receiving funding for an Okanagan college. I lived on the reserve for 3 years to be able to say I live there. I was there long enough to know who is who, what positions they hold, what are they actually doing with the funding, what are they ghostly pretending that they have there, that they're clean.
It sounds a lot like the Mafia or Halliburton, you know?
Well, yes. And then there's INAC, which is the closest fake institution representing INAC in Vancouver, are going along with this. The authorities that are assigned, Mr. Price, Al Price, he is the head of everything that goes on that Penticton Reserve. INAC was established by the British monarchy to monitor so that these sort of crimes, these sort of rusting, these sort of favoritism amongst their own people, native people, of nepotism would not occur, because Al Price, Gina George, the Della Shades are all educated to that the system would allow the fairness to be on the reservation. Now, to this day, what most people don't understand and why they're getting away with this is that they're building now prisons, state prisons. They're all prisons within prisons. That now they're trying to convince, and that this was now just proved through the contractual tenders in the Okanagan, that the Asuyas Indian Band, and they're well famous for their wines, and they're very successful. They're very profitable. They really have done some seriously good things with their finances over the last decade or so, besides of 10 years or so of planning before initiating these things. And having a successful winery and producing the product and selling it globally and successful. Well, the thing is that what's going on is they've got contracts now. The federal government of Canada has now found some certain tribes, if you will, savage Indians, in their locations being prime tenders to have tendering out locations to build prisons within inside a prison. Now, to this day, what the archives of the reservations in upper and lower Canada in the archivals, that this pertains also to the United States, that all reservations are still technically to this day prisons. They don't have fences. They don't have barbed wires. They don't have prison guards with spot lamps and spotlights and dogs to chase you if you happen to wander off the reservation. But they are technically prisons, and they still are. And anybody who resides within which is known as that area that's called the reservation, then you become immediately, voluntarily or not, you become, regardless of white, yellow, red, black, you become a prisoner of that institution. Now, the prison guard, the warden, is essentially the band manager. He is the granddaddy. He's the one that walks around with the wand of command. Then he's got his little soldiers. He's got a soldier of land administrator. Now, we have documents from Joan Phillips herself that she signed, because we were in the process of doing some timbering with Ramona's private property to rid of the, I'm not sure if the people out there, the listeners out there in New Zealand in your area, know that we've got a very bad infestation of the pine beetle and the mountain beetle, and it's turning our forests dry and without vegetation and eating the prime timber, literally, just acres and miles of it. So we wanted to maintain Ramona's, her and myself, to maintain the properties, to have a proper silviculture company who is qualified for that to come out and do an assessment approximately of how many timbers would be classified as diseased, because all private crown, etc., landowners must maintain this together. Otherwise, we cannot stop this disease of the mountain and pine beetle. So I began to write letters to the regional office in Vernon, B.C., about 3 hours' drive due north of Penticton, British Columbia, and of a lady named Heather Rice, who's appointed this through the British Columbia provincial government to head all this kind of programs. As it turns out, she too quickly recognized Ramona in the first email letter that she is actually who she claims she is in the letter, that she has X amount of lands, acres or hectares, where the locations are. As she turns out, she recommends that we recommend to her that we are going to do this on our own privately. She has no problem with this. Instead, she encourages it that we go through the band office, the Penticton Indian Band office, through another individual whose name is Darren Humber, because he is the one that has the local equipment, the local crews, to cut down the trees and so forth, and all the local tree removers to eventually load it up on the semi-trucks and haul it away, because it's still very good lumber. Now, this has been going on for several decades, and Ramona has not seen a penny. What we did in return, we went to the Minister of Finance of British Columbia in Vancouver, just straight above us here in this Penticton, or this Vancouver Public Library, and talked to a gentleman who his sole interest and job that he does is he's an auditor of the Ministry of Finance in British Columbia. When we mentioned the Paul family's name, he knew instantly that there has never been any Paul been put into the records and files and to do with any lands at all, whether it's tree removal, minerals removal, any of that sort of thing. So he knew right away that there was a smell of fraud and theft. He gave some very good advice on emails. We still have these emails. And most of you know yourself, Vinny, that most government officials do not exactly explain to you and tell you and lay it out exactly what you should do. He did that for us. Thomas Brown did that for us. And he said, go after the records and files of the weigh scales, where the trucks will have all the information at the weigh scales, because they're official records of who the truck driver is, what company the truck is working for, what was the load's weight, its location of where it was removed from, its IR mark number that all reservations have assigned, so that distinguishes exactly where that timber came from, right down to the GPS reading of the property, whether it's Crown property that it was removed from or it's private property. Well, Ramona's family has been basically, I'll use the term, ripped off since day one, because when her hereditary chief, Francois Tomoykin, was one of the first ones to be Aboriginal in that area that's called Penticton, B.C., a city of about 45,000 people, she has old photographs that you could actually just see their house, her grandfather Tomoykin's house, and the rest of the whole city has nothing. Absolutely nothing. The Paul family, as it turns out, or Tomoykin Paul family, own 3/4 of the land that makes up the Penticton Regional, sometimes International Airport. She's never collected a penny. The land that our one and only Penticton Law Courts building sits is Ramona's and her family's land. Not a penny. This is going on 4 generations now. It's shared between the Penticton Indian Band and its council in chief and the Transport Canada, because they're federal, the actual Prime Minister of Canada, or SIC, and then the city of Penticton itself is a major shareholder in one of the 4 components that negotiate the next year or 2 year or 5 year or whatever term contractual to keep running these institutions as an airport or a courthouse. Now, the 2 largest British Columbian hydro companies, corporations, BC Hydro and Fortis BC, back when hereditary chief Francois Tomoykin was beginning to argue and establish his foot on the ground, what he will allow, what he will not allow in his lands. While he was in Ottawa in the mid-1800s to the late 1800s, made a special trip many times out to Ottawa, but in this particular case he had the issue of these two electric corporations were running power poles and power lines through his properties. And he didn't care about that. What he cared about, progress he enjoyed, especially when it's for all, but what he didn't like, that they were just helping themselves to his lands. They didn't consult with him that whether this was a good location to run the power lines through his property through this way or that way, or, you know, because he has purposes of, because he was working the lands. He basically was the daddy, who is the proper term, I guess, when you're a hereditary chief, that it is your responsibility to look after every living soul that's on your tribe and your accompanying tribes near you, your neighbors. He had the largest vegetable farm. He had the largest herd of cattle, largest herd of horses. He took it upon himself to be the one that provided the bread and butter for all of all ages that could actually work and doing the things that they like to do. So he took on this large task as being a bloodline, true hereditary royal chief. And he does, and he is, and I will continue just to finish off that part of this story, and that is that he is single-handedly, you can Google this, that he's the single-handedly only chief out west that made the only treaty that's registered in the British Columbia Territory, and it's called the McBride-McGregor Treaty. Now, this treaty does not pertain one bit to him at all. It has nothing to do with him, his people, his lands, his regions, his territories. But as an outstanding hereditary chief as he is, he took on his chiefhood position and duties and recognized that this particular area in British Columbia needed this type of treaty or protection. And he did it himself. And he successfully was registered this with the federal government of Canada, as well as the British monarchy. Now, this man deserves to be respected of its highest. Now, we're talking the mid to late 1800s. We were still riding horse-drawn carts, for example. There was many things that we didn't have invented yet and making use of. Now, this man would go on the long journey with the train all the way to Ottawa to present these things, and I don't want corporations running their power lines through my private land, and I have my reasons. Well, when he announced it as a fair man to the corporations that he did not want that to happen, he saw that they were making moves that they were going to about to do that. He announced that he was going to Ottawa to put a stop to that, so don't waste your time and don't waste your personnel and energy and finances to start running the power lines through my private property. Well, he still went out to Ottawa. He still had faith. This is an Indian now who believes in the words of the white man, still forcing it that there are some that will honor the treaties, the agreements of just a man that has private land, regardless of what color you are, what language you speak, that you will respect it. As he was in Ottawa it took a week just to get out there in those days. So another week back, so that's two. He stayed about a week to conduct its business because he was allowed into Ottawa and Parliament anytime he wanted without appointment, in other words. So this is how well he was respected. So about 3.5 weeks later, he returns her home and Ottawa ignored him. And then sort of the two hydro companies, and they ran all their power lines in and had it established that they didn't need to trespass on his property anymore. That's how quickly they set up these power poles and these power stations. Now, Mr. and Hereditary Chief Francois Tumoinkin was smart enough to know he's not a violent man. There's no necessary channels to be violent or hostile. So he knew to destruct someone's property that's sitting on his private property was also wrong. So his idea of to chop down the power poles and to dismantle it in such a way that it would destroy major parts of the private property that belongs to the hydro companies, he chose to just use the old-fashioned business way, which is negotiate, to approach them. and was wanting in return the same respect, that you have your things on my property. I would like you to move them, and by all means negotiate with the neighboring property, or at least negotiate with me where it would be best for both of us interests on where to run the property. So that documentation would be presented in such a way that it's an agreement. And then the man can collect certain compensations to turn around and pass it on to his people with the money and so forth. But they eliminated him out completely out of the process. So the man spent the rest of his life passing that on to Ramona's mother, who was the next one to inherit the medallion and the flag of the West. And her name was Mary Rachel Timoykin, married name Paul. The lady was pacing ground for many, many years, waiting for someone that was under the same description as I, right down to the long curly hair, the beard, either a long stick or a gun in his hand, a dog, and dressed in leaves. Well, as you and I would call it today, it's camouflage clothing. Ramona's mother was very strong in tea leaf reading and many other rituals and traditions. The woman was exactamundo. I'm surprised that she didn't even tag my name. This is how accurate she was. When Ramona and I are the same age now, when we were 14, 15, her mother told her of all this information, that the true white buffalo calf, I have been ceremonied this on Monday, January 22nd, 2007, by the appropriate players, the shaman, the medicine man, the representative of Mother Earth, and a witness, and then myself, and the white buffalo calf wrap was held by the shaman for about 15 years because Chief Arival Looking Horse of the 19th generation of sacred pipe holder knew that the location of the true two-legged white buffalo will be in that area. And that was me. Now, I did have 5 years of surveillance by the Native Indians, just as a RCMP or some other corporation, company, or high level of government would use. They use that same format of surveillancing me to make sure that I was the real true two-legged white buffalo calf pipe. Now, we also know that the circles have an evil side and a good side. That just comes with everything in society. So as it turns out, both of them knew of my existence, that I would come. There were some fakes. There were some imposters that actually came. Trying to convince Ramona's mother and her that I'm that fellow from Saskatchewan, or known as Bare Bones Saskatchewan. And the Queen did not like the name of Bare Bones, so she named that city or that town as Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. So as it turns out, we lived in the same city, Penticton. The entire town ostracized us both. We were to the point where we never crossed paths in this small little town that were sandwiched between two lakes, freshwater lakes. And it's amazing that when I fell in love with her at the age of 12, I was fishing on a bridge, and her and her mother was just going on a walk. And I knew this young woman was supposed to be for me. When they eventually removed her off the reservation to some Mormon family in Alberta, the province of Alberta, I knew of her existence was removed, that I knew her presence was gone. It took me 37 years. On Thursday, August 27th of 2007, to find her again. And as it turns out, I did find her in the same town as Penticton, B.C. And I never married. I never had children, whereas she did continue on with having normality like that. But I never did. I chose to stick with my heart. And as I was getting much older, I thought, well, perhaps this might have been a mistake. But either way, I knew that I just had to stick with my guns. That even if I know that she's married, I know she's probably got grandchildren now and so forth, that I still had to let the lady know that I loved her, I still love her, and that I was the one that was really supposed to be for her, according to her mother. Why that was so important to me was because I began to notice these odds and bits of wrongs that were severe wrongs that were causing severe harm to me by the both levels of government. I knew the Queen of England was behind it. I knew the Vatican was behind it, even though I'm not native Indian. My parents are both born Hungarians, but I was born in Canada. I did uncover that I am the Queen of England's lab rat. This was just recently with the United Nations Plenipotentiary Office confirming this, and that's a whole nother show, speaking of Lawrence Jason Alexander Kinnock. He's replaced the United Nations offices and the International Criminal Court because there is no justice. Now, I wanted to lead up to that, that there is no justice. It doesn't matter that we got that court file number. It doesn't matter the accomplishments that we did this year. It doesn't matter that they were so proud of us and them themselves, that not just anybody can walk in here and do the things that you guys did. Poverty, wearing secondhand clothes from a Sally Ann store and living on the street, living in shelters and saving the money just so you can come here to give us a handwritten affidavit and about a box full of 400 documents with a lot of RCMP files and reports and so forth and so forth. And going to institutions that are supposed to be there just for the people, like British Columbians Civil Liberties Association. What a fake office.
I think things. Well, you, a little bit of feedback. If you, there we go. Yeah, I think that most agencies are named the direct opposite. Okay, of what their actual purpose is. So, if you've got a criminal justice system, you think, oh, it must mean to bring criminals to justice. No. It means it's just criminal.
Right.
All right. And it's the same thing with everything else. A serious fraud office or investigators or something like that, they're behind a lot of the frauds. All of those people who are charged with the investigation and the prosecutions of crimes that are against good people, they're kind of on the take in a lot of cases. It's quite an unfortunate and very incestuous system. And the whole system itself kind of needs to be overthrown in some way and or more likely just exposed for what it is.
I agree with you. I agree with you all the way, Vinny, because not only, number one, it needs to be exposed. Number two, the exposure of the things that they're doing to the people. The people are extremely smart and intelligent. I don't care what color you are. I don't care what language you speak. I don't care how far up or you went to in education with school. Everyone has its wisdom at its designated place in society, which was chosen by you or forced upon you. Whether you're a rich man or a poor man, every man, woman, and child has the intelligence to know exactly what's right or wrong, whether you know it through your mental capacity or you feel it through your emotions, because God gave us both of those to use at our leisure and at our benefit. Now, what has occurred over these 37 years trying to find Ramona to tell her a bunch of things impersonal so that I may release myself? I didn't expect her to just all of a sudden drop her life and her grandchildren and her married man that she's with and having all these goods and bads with to just all of a sudden, you know, elope with me just because I show up out of her life and say to her, hey, I'm the dude that fell in love with you when I was 12 years old. Come with me.
That sounds kind of creepy when you say it like that.
You know, you know, but I mean, this is what was in my heart.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have loved to see that happen because I was alone. I was single. I chose not to have a marriage, a commitment, and children of my own. Now, at the time, I was about 40 years old. Some guys would say, hey, you know, you're not that old. I mean, you can still have kids and all that, which is true. But I knew that, I mean, honestly, she's a gorgeous woman. I knew that that would not happen. That's not going to happen where she's going to be that available for me at that precise day that I don't even know when it's going to happen, that she's going to be available that afternoon or that morning and then just pack her bags and come with me. So What I wanted to do was, all of a sudden I uncovered, asking for my records and files, when I knew all this odd and weirdnesses, and people treating me like I was an actual murderer, and an actual, in that sense, I was now homeless and forced to be corralled out into the Rocky Mountains of my own hometown, because the ministry and the federal government and the provincial government and all the other players that took to ostracize me, holding my pension and so forth, forced me in the mountains. I started to roll up my sleeves and ask for all my records and files. And I was doing it in such a way that I was doing 7 per week. I did approximately about 120, 127, mostly federal level FOI requests, Freedom of Information requests. I got a lot of the documentation back. Most of the letters were signed and dated, and they had its own value of perjury. Now, one perjury can enter it into the office of the Information Commissioner's Office, which is the court registrar office, to the Supreme Court of Canada and to the Federal Court of Canada. And these kinds of issues belong in those courts. First, to start off with the Federal Court of Canada, as the results appear in that level, you may take it to higher up to the Supreme Court of Canada. I also knew that the whole system for me to even try all this was a waste of time. We're just all products of the monarchy.
Well, I would say that the system we would have, if it was applied the way it says it was, it would be a perfect system.
The laws?
Yeah. The laws would be great if they were followed.
The laws are perfect. They even have backup to the backup. And I strongly believe that. I'm of Justinian. I taught myself. I took 7 years out of my life, full time, 7 days a week, living, and part of that time was living in the mountains. And I took the time to learn laws, corporate laws, civil law, criminal law, the ones that pertained that I knew that I was going to branch into and intertwine with each other before I even wrote one letter, before I even wrote one Freedom of Information request. I needed to have all my armor, all my tools in place, starting with the knowledge of their system of processes, system of law, system of when do they do things, how do they do it, where do they do it, the system of all its levels.
Well, that way you get to use their own system against them.
I did that, but they also used the system against me, which was quite easy to do. I mean, all they had to do was make sure I didn't get my disability pension, and that made me have to move into the mountains. I used to be surveillance with helicopters, and they used to do the RCMP, and that used to do just use me as a training process, where I was live, I was real in that mountains, but they were using police tactics and helicopter tactics, pretending that I was that escapee, or that I was that fellow that's wanted, and how they would go about approaching that mountainside and approaching my living quarters and me as the individual. Now, it became bizarre. I mean, how they dramatized this in like a TV land. I kept focused. I had to. It was guaranteeing my survival. I had to live on nothing. I did not shoot any animals in order to survive. For some reason, the higher being would not allow me. I'm a great hunter. That's all I do. That's how I sustain myself. I had great amount of opportunities for bear, deer, moose, elk, and so forth, the wapiti, but I chose not to. I chose to live in a way that was in prayer, with roots, with berries, with other sources. Actually, I did pop off the odd squirrel and that was for my dog. And it wasn't for me. I even went as far as to see if the dog can survive on the food that man makes for the dog, that I will eat that, and I did. I'm not saying I ate it every day, but I did eat some. There was times where I chose to basically, my supplementary diet was to eat all what a bear would survive on. Now, this is an animal that's 300, 400, 500 pounds, or 250, 300 kilos, for example. Now, if a bear can survive on apples, carrots, and the odd grain here and there, then so could I. Well, as it turns out, the doctor awarded me thumbs up, because I must have knew exactly what I was doing. because all the medical examinations that were done on me, because he was very aware of my situation, living in the mountains year-round. I mean, my school teachers were there in that town, my parents, my sisters, their kids. Just think, if all of a sudden your whole community did this to you, or any of your listeners, that you're living in your small town that you've loved and you helped and you did lots of things voluntarily, that all of a sudden now they find you find yourself being isolated to the point where everybody in the town that you're from knows, and not one person stepping forward to help you. Mm. That's when you know, when you're doing your FOI request, that everybody's not only in on it, but everybody's known for years what they've been doing to you. You're just the fool that's the last to find out.
Yeah. Or either that, or they just don't want any part of it because they think the justice ain't worth it. And throughout history, there have been people who say, you know what, it is worth it. Because it's not just me that's going to suffer as a result of bringing these scumbags to justice. It's everybody that's suffering perpetually in some small way because they don't stand up and do something about it. And sometimes it just takes one person. Just one.
Well, yeah, I agree, because, you know, there's been presidents and prime ministers throughout the world, throughout since man's walked the earth, that there's that saying that we're all familiar with, that one man can make a difference. And I think I've gotten to the point where I have, in 13 years that I have, had to fight through arbitrations and tribunals to be awarded my obvious physical disabilities, that was overwhelming, and then removing the documentation, and just on and on and on, just whatever trivial tactics they used, knowing that it was just to stall me off to make my life more hell, but they knew they were going to lose these battles anyway. So as it turns out, I win. I win every time. I win every time. Who loses is them. But I went 11 and a half years now without, out of the 13, without my disability pension. I know there's a lot of men and women out there that are listening, that they would just think right now for themselves, how the heck could a man or a woman go 11 and a half years out of 13 where you didn't collect a dime? Not a dime. There is a Lord. And he found certain individuals that needed something from me, whether it was counseling, to remove yourself from substance abuses, to have faith and belief in you that you are strong enough, that you can do it, you can do these impossible things that you wish to do, and that your time is ready to do it. So there was these kinds of trade-offs that did exist. And I've been arrested for people because I was my hair was pulled, I was kicked, I was bit, I was set up. I had everything going against me, even by the people I was helping remove themselves from addiction of substances. I took it upon myself to know that these are the risks, and this is what's going to take to get somebody off substance. You must be there full time every minute, especially on paydays. Because if you can't be there on that payday, that's the day that person gives up that whole week of sobriety.
Mm.
So I did get arrested. All those things I just described to you happened to me. I successfully have helped 11 people individually. It's covered the span of my 55 years. And I started in my young 20s. I don't drink alcohol. I'm not really favor that substance. I think it's one of the most dangerous in the world. A lot of people would disagree with me, and that's their opinions. Drugs, well, it's the same thing. I believe in cannabis. I believe in the naturals. With a limit, because everything is harmful in abundance. I don't care what it is. It's going to hurt you sooner or later. So balance is very important. So as it turns out, to answer my question or everyone's question out there, how would one like me survive 11 and a half years out of 13 without a pension? That there is the odd person out there that recognizes the seriousness of keeping at least one individual that dedicated, that committed, that will not give up on the issue of, I'm fighting for my rights, I'm fighting for my liberties, and at the same time while I'm doing that, I'm fighting for everyone else's that I'm not familiar with, that I haven't met yet, but I know that there's more out there than I, and I'm doing this for them. I know that I'm going to eventually give up my truck, I'm going to give up my house, my apartment, my car, my clothes, my everything that I've acquired in 50 years, that day's coming where either my own loved ones are going to destroy those things, or it's going to be the obvious enemies of mine, or the enemies of democracy, or the enemies of against human rights and liberties. As it turns out, it did happen that way. Mm. I'm down to the clothes that I'm wearing right now. And I was a very successful man. I probably built half of the high-rise apartments and office buildings here in downtown Vancouver and out in Burnaby. We're talking dozens of them. The average one took 2 years to build before people could move into them. I've had many sub-trades where I've gotten ticketed. I was very established in athletics. I could have been anything I wanted. My IQ is so high up there that I deliberately, in my community, purposely brought my homework down to a C, C plus, through in the odd B just to make it look good. But I knew I could have ran with a straight A system. I chose not to because I did not want the attention. My school records show that I was renamed Peter just as that incident or that had happened in the Bible, in biblical times. I'm not trying to lean towards that I am this or I am that. I don't want the job. I never wanted the job. I still don't want the job. But this has turned into a full-time thing for 27 years now, where I've actually exposed myself, where I don't care who the enemies are, that I want them to know I'm here, I'm not leaving, and I'm coming for you.
All
and
right.
I'm coming for every man.
Well, I think this is a good place to leave it, and it's been very enjoyable and insightful to have both of you here today. Would you like to deliver some final statements? I know you're on Facebook there.
Yes, I'm on Facebook. So is Ramona under our names. That's shown as Sandra Joseph Kovacs. We welcome anyone out there to ask for our friendship. But basically, we're both. Always continually blocked by Facebook, so that's kind of understandable. They don't want us to grow a friendship or a network of people that have questions or that we may help or they may be able to help us. We're on Skype as well, and my Skype name is Poppies, underscore Poppies 234. But that's also in my Facebook about information category. What I'd like to do is I really would more appreciate if yourself, Vinny, if you agree with this and your listeners, if I could have the matriarch of the West here, Queen Victoria, 1837, silver medallion holder, to say a small few words in English that we all understand, but close off a prayer that I know is very powerful, but it's in heavenly tongue. And I had her do this on the Kate of Gaia radio talk show about 2.5-3 weeks ago when I did two appearances and Ramona joined me on the Saturday, and there was a lot of people that appreciated not only her prayer but the power behind it and its meanings. And what this is about in her prayer of heavenly prayer, first of all, you can tell when she does do it that it's not gibberish. You know that it's a language. And it's so powerful that some other elders out there did call in before the show actually officially closed and wanted to just thank Ramona for doing the prayer. But what this is about is to wake up the sovereignty spirit, the spirits that have been here and left us now, to call them back, to guide us and to continue to watch over us, but to waken the individuals and the souls that are here now. Because sometimes one word, one song, one smell, one odor can wake up a man to lead him in a totally different direction. So I would like to ask the matriarch if she would kindly say a few words that what her prayer is going to be about, and then she will say it in her heavenly tongue. Would you do that for us? Would you say a prayer for us all before we sign off?
Okay.
All right. There's the microphone up close there.
So we're going to end this prayer. I wrote a whole bunch of them, but I didn't bring that one, my book, with me.
That's fine. Yeah. You can go with the seed of your thoughts.
Okay.
Prayer for sovereignty.
Okay, well, this is to everybody out there. thank you for listening and lending your ear to us for this time being. I'm just going to pray for all of us and for sovereignty. Thank you, Father God, in English first. Thank you, Father God. Thank you, Holy Spirit. Thank you, Lord Jesus. Thank you.
Amen.
All right. Thank you, guys. And it's been an honor and a privilege and various other nice adjectives, too. And I wish you all the best in your campaign to, free your people and, I guess, in the process, vicariously, everybody else's as well. Thank you.
You want to say it and not have any time.
Okay. Or... Did you want me to say that in heavenly tongue?
Sure. I don't think I've heard heavenly tongue before. I've had it, but I've not heard it.
Okay.
Thank you. Amen.
Very lovely. Thank you, guys. And have a nice evening.
Yes, you too, Vinny. Thank you for having
you
us.
Too. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you, listeners.
Yes, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. This is the Vinny Eastwood Show signing off again. Thank you very much.